This is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
On Tuesday, the Brazilian government filed a criminal complaint against journalist Glenn Greenwald, alleging he helped hack the cell phones of public officials. Prosecutors are demanding Greenwald be charged in relation to an investigative series he worked on that exposed ethical violations, corruption, and politically driven convictions by Brazilian prosecutors and a high-ranking government official. The Intercept, the news organization Greenwald helped found, began publishing these stories last June based on a trove of leaked private chats, audio recordings, and other documentation. Greenwald is best known for his work exposing widespread surveillance practices by the U.S. government, based on documents leaked by whistleblower Edward Snowden. U.S. lawmakers and press freedom organizations have spoken out in support of Greenwald, warning that these charges could lead to broader attacks on free speech under the government of far-right Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. So, here to discuss this in his first U.S. radio interview since a criminal complaint was filed, we're joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald, co-founder of The Intercept. He's with us via Skype. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Tell us exactly what the Brazilian prosecutors are alleging regarding your role in the investigation published by The Intercept and The Intercept Brazil.
So the expose that you referenced at the beginning were enabled by an anonymous source who came to us with a large archive of communications and other secret documents exchanged between high-level Brazilian officials that he said he had hacked. By the time he talked to me, he had already obtained all of this material. They are nonetheless accusing me of being a participant in the what they're calling an organized criminal organization, based on their theory that while talking to the source asked me whether or not he should be deleting the conversations I was having with him. I explained to him that I couldn't give him any advice, but that I did have an obligation to protect him as my source and that I was saving all communications and there was no need for him to save them because I was keeping them in a secure place for my own protection and his. The federal police concluded their investigation 2 months ago and said there's no evidence that I committed any crime of any kind. They even pointed to that specific conversation and said this is proof that he always used professionalism and caution to avoid involving himself in any potential criminality. But the prosecutor, who's known as being a pro-Bolsonaro far-right prosecutor prone to abuse his power, has the opposite theory, which is that when I said, oh, you don't need to worry, I'm keeping copies of all of our conversations, that I was implicitly giving him a wink-wink form of advice to destroy the communications and therefore made myself part of the criminal organization.
And when exactly did these communications happen?
The source first contacted me on Mother's Day of 2019, which, if my memory serves, was May 11th. And I spoke to the source over the course of the next several weeks as we prepared our stories and as he uploaded the materials that he had obtained, first onto my telephone and then ultimately onto the servers of The Intercept. So it was during these 2 or 3 weeks of conversations when we were preparing our stories and working with our source that I was speaking with him.
Prior to the criminal complaint issued this week, a Brazilian Supreme Court justice actually went so far as to order the federal police to stop investigating you in this case. Why did the judge feel the need to take that measure in the first place?
Well, from the beginning, the Brazilian government has made clear that they don't believe in a free press at all. The president of the country, Jair Bolsonaro, has spent 30 years advocating for a return to the military dictatorship that ruled the country until 1985. He has often railed against press freedom. And shortly after we started our reporting, our exposés that had as their primary target the justice minister, the very powerful justice minister of the Bolsonaro government, Sergio Moro, news leaked from his office that they had initiated an investigation into my personal finances, which everybody knew obviously was in retaliation for the reporting. And so a center-left political party in Brazil went to the Supreme Court and petitioned the Supreme Court for an order barring any investigations into me relating to the reporting that I was doing on the grounds that it was a violation of a free press. And the Supreme Court accepted that petition and ordered all 8 law enforcement agencies, including the prosecutors, not to investigate me in any way in connection with this reporting on the grounds that it would be an attack on a free press and a violation of the constitutional liberty of press freedom. And this, the judge that issued that ruling is now very angry and publicly saying that what this prosecutor did was a clear violation of the Supreme Court order.
So just to, for those of us who live here in the U.S., who, it sounds like this is basically a political or a constitutional sort of struggle that's playing out there. Is it between the Supreme Court and other branches of government?
Yeah, I think that people in the U.S. And more broadly in the West have sometimes had trouble understanding the true nature of the Bolsonaro movement and President Bolsonaro himself, in part because the Western media spent 2018 referring to him as the Trump of the tropics, as though he was just kind of another Donald Trump. And people look at the U.S., where Donald Trump is president, and obviously it sees attacks on democracy by Trump, but nonetheless see a functioning, healthy democracy in the U.S., and conclude that Bolsonaro must not be that threatening. In reality, he's nowhere near Trump in terms of the threats and menaces he poses to democracy, in part because Brazilian democracy is much younger than U.S. democracy and therefore much more fragile. It's only about 30 years old. And this movement of Jair Bolsonaro, they explicitly want a return to the military dictatorship, where the military generals that ruled the country, with the support of the U.S., I should add, routinely did things like ignore court orders, declared them invalid, remove dissident Congress people from their seats, shut down newspapers. And so the fact that they're doing things in that are contrary to the Supreme Court and even the federal police are features, not bugs for them, because they very much want to set up a conflict with these other institutions to make clear that no other institutions in Brazil have power except the president and his movement. That's a big part of what they're doing, is to create a climate where everybody is scared to oppose them on the grounds that they're willing to show that they're willing to violate any rules, even an order from the Supreme Court to punish journalists or political activists who oppose them.
Let's talk about the actual stories that you worked on. What exactly were some of the findings in the Secret Brazil Archive series that The Intercept and The Intercept Brazil published?
So Brazilian politics has really been dominated for the last 5 years by an anti-corruption probe that's called Operation Car Wash, and that was led by Sergio Moro, who is now Bolsonaro's justice minister, but at the time was the judge overseeing these cases. And it was incredibly sweeping in nature. I mean, it put into prison multiple billionaires and oligarchs, leaders of political parties, and most famously, it imprisoned the former two-term left-wing president Lula da Silva at a time when he was leading all polls to regain the presidency in 2018. He was running ahead of Bolsonaro by 15 or 20 points at the time that Judge Moro convicted him, which resulted in Lula being barred from running, paving the way for Bolsonaro, who then turned around once he won and rewarded the judge who condemned Lula with a huge promotion, elevating him from a low-level judge to the justice minister of the entire country. They also played a huge role in the impeachment of Lula's successor in the presidency, Dilma Rousseff. So this Operation Car Wash has dominated Brazilian politics for years. It made a hero out of Sergio Moro. He looked like this super ethical, crusading anti-corruption judge. The archive that we were given and that we were reporting showed a very different picture. It showed that, in fact, Judge Moro and the prosecutors were secretly collaborating with one another the entire time for years in order to ensure the conviction of the very defendants Judge Moro was required to neutrally and objectively judge. It was as though Judge Moro was part of the prosecutorial team. They were protecting political allies on purpose by shielding them from corruption investigations. They were essentially violating every legal and ethical rule that governs how judges and prosecutors need to conduct themselves. And it shined a light on fundamental corruption within the anti-corruption task force. And it ultimately led to the freeing of their most prized possession, which was ex-president Lula da Silva, who in November, as a result of a Supreme Court ruling, walked out of Judge Moro's prison. So the reporting we've done over the last 9 months has been incredibly destabilizing to the Bolsonaro government, to its most important member, which is Minister Morrow, who had been a national hero and has now been significantly reduced in stature, which is why the Bolsonaro government and Minister Morrow are so infuriated by the reporting we've been doing.
There's a big team from The Intercept Brazil that worked on the story. Has anyone else involved in this been targeted for their work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the editor-in-chief of The Intercept Brazil, who, you know, is Brazilian, our entire team, with the exception of one person and myself, are Brazilian journalists down there, has received all kinds of death threats. Like us, he's not left his house without armed security. Members of Bolsonaro's party in Congress have posted pictures of the building where our newsroom is located, encouraging people to go there and obviously inciting violence against them. I became the face of the story in part because of my prior visibility as a journalist with the Snowden reporting and otherwise, but also because I was a good villain for them. I'm technically a foreigner in Brazil, even though I've lived there for 15 years. I'm gay, and the Bolsonaro movement is deeply anti-LGBT. And I'm also married to a member of Congress who's from the left-wing socialist party, my husband, David Miranda. So when you combine all that, I made for a great villain, and they deliberately personalized the story onto me. We worked with some of the largest media outlets in Brazil, including the largest newspaper in the country, Folha of São Paulo. And yet, even when those other news magazines or newspapers would publish stories, they would purposely say, Glenn Greenwald published another leaked document today, because I was a good villain for them and became kind of the focal point of a lot of the hatred for that reason.
Remind us a little more of what President Bolsonaro, his administration, and even his family have said about you and your husband, David Miranda.
Yeah, so in August, on three consecutive days, President Bolsonaro gave press conferences where he just brought up my name and started railing against me, saying that I deserved to be in prison. He also claimed that David and I, my husband, had married fraudulently in order to give me protection from deportation, because under Brazilian law, if you're married to a Brazilian citizen, you can't be deported. In fact, David and I married 15 years ago in 2005 when I was still a lawyer, before I even became a journalist. We would have had to have been incredibly prescient to have done that. And even worse, he said we adopted our two children, which we did in 2017, Brazilian children, for the same reason that we fraudulently adopted our children as a means of protecting ourselves from deportation. Nobody adopts children to gain an advantage in the law. And the Supreme Court initiated a criminal inquiry into his comments after he made them. But even going back prior to him becoming president, I've been a critic of his for a long time. He went on Twitter one time and used a very crude and bigoted anti-gay slur referencing anal sex when I had reported on him once. He had a major argument with my husband on Twitter when my husband entered Congress for the first time. So there's been a lot of contentiousness and a lot of bad blood in our interaction over the years. And he's now the president of the country, abusing his power to extract some sort of vengeance, not just for the reporting, but for this long history of our being critics of his.
What is your course of action moving forward, not just for yourself, but for your family as well?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously our family has had to take extreme security measures from the beginning of the reporting, and we're continuing to do that. My husband's security is provided by the Congress, mine by The Intercept. But there is a major difference between the prosecutors in Brazil and, the Justice Department in the U.S. In the U.S., the Justice Department can just single-handedly indict you. If they charge you with criminal charges, you're automatically a defendant. In Brazil, the next step is, once the prosecutors charge you with a crime, in order for you to actually be a criminal defendant, it has to be accepted by a judge. A judge has to rule that the charges brought against you are valid. So this particular prosecutor is notorious for being a far-right prosecutor. As I had said, 2 months ago, he brought similar criminal charges against the head of the Brazilian Bar Association, claiming that when the Brazilian Bar Association president criticized Minister Moro, that constituted a crime, the criminal defamation. And in that case, the courts just simply threw out the charge, just rejected and refused to accept it. So we have an opportunity to first go to the judge and argue to the judge that these charges are invalid and they shouldn't even be accepted at all in the first instance. And if they are accepted, I become formally a criminal defendant. But then there's also obviously a role for the Supreme Court, given that the Supreme Court already issued an order barring me from being investigated. So if I can't be investigated, how can I be prosecuted for the reporting that I've done? And the Supreme Court is sending signals that they too regard this as a violation of their order.
Given the nature of all these charges and your profile, are you hearing from U.S. officials on this? Are they offering support in any manner?
I mean, I've gotten support from all over the world, from the left, the center, and the right. Even Tucker Carlson on Fox News last night did a segment vehemently denouncing the Brazilian government and defending me, National Review in the U.S., various right-wing outlets in Brazil. The Trump government, on the other hand, is a very close ally of the Bolsonaro government, and there's not a lot of love for me within the State Department run by Mike Pompeo, who used to be at the CIA, or within the National Security Agency's or foreign policy branches of the U.S. government because of the reporting I did in the Snowden story when I published thousands of classified U.S. documents around the world. So I'm not expecting very much support from the U.S. government, but press freedom groups and leading politicians like Senator Sanders and Ilhan Omar and many other members of Congress have expressed lots of support for me. And in Brazil, media outlets from across the spectrum are indignant over these charges because they realize that if they can do this to me, they can do this to them.
Glenn, before we let you go, how are you and your family doing?
You know, I think it's, you know, I would be lying if I were to deny that this has been a very difficult 9 months for my family and for myself. Obviously, when you can't leave your house without armed security and armored vehicles and you're being threatened by the president of the country with prison and all the invasiveness that they've tried to impose on our private lives, it's obviously difficult. I think the fact that both David and I went through this in the Snowden reporting when we were threatened by the U.S. government, he was detained by the U.K. government in a notorious incident at Heathrow Airport, has made it a little bit easier because we've done something similar, although this has been much more difficult. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if you go into journalism, these are the kinds of stories you want to do. And if you want to confront power, inherent in that, is that you're going to be subjected to attacks and risks and dangers. And so while it's not been easy or fun all the time, it's been very gratifying. Brazil is a country I love. I care about Brazilian democracy, and I feel like the journalism we're doing is defending and strengthening it. And that's something that gives me a sense of purpose that makes all the costs worthwhile.
Glenn Greenwald is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and co-founder of The Intercept and The Intercept Brazil. Glenn, thank you so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Remember, you can always call us about anything at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway. Check out The Takeaway in your podcast feeds. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Arun Vandegopal, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.